This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2023, held at Pleasant View School in Arcola, Illinois, on March 3 and 4.
So I wonder what you came in here this evening and sat down thinking of what you're going to hear. For an introduction, I want to think about the word technology for a couple of minutes. When you think of technology, when you think of this title, what comes to your mind? I've got an object lesson that I want to share with you. I have three objects here in the pulpit, and I'm going to bring them up one at a time. And when you see this and you figure out what it is, I'd like for you to call out the name of this object loud and clear, okay? This is the first one.
Rolling pin.
Rolling pin. All right.
Hammer.
This might roll off here.
Telephone.
Cell phone. All right. So, which one of these did you come in here expecting to hear most about? The phone. Why? This title is pretty broad. When you think of the word technology, we tend to think about the cell phone. Am I bumping this thing? It's thundering. We think about this or something related to this. But really, technology includes the rolling pin, it includes the hammer, and it includes the cell phone. And it includes a lot of things that you use. The word technology really represents in the broader spectrum, it just represents knowledge applied and a lot of times in an invention that helps us to reach, to extend our reach of usefulness. So the rolling pin, how would you roll out dough without a rolling pin? You could try to use your fingers to somehow pat it down, but the rolling pin extends your reach and your usefulness. That's technology. Using the object that rolls with the pin that goes through it, you can hold on to the handles, you can roll out that dough, is technology. When you take a hammer and you put a nail out here and you hold on to the end of the hammer, like this, if I was going to take the nail and hold it here and go like this, how long would it take me to put the nail in? But what about if I take the nail and I go like this? Will it speed up? Absolutely. Why is that? Because I've applied knowledge and being able to leverage my force by holding onto the end of the hammer and hitting it with this end, the business end of the hammer, I can do something that I couldn't do without this hammer. That's technology. So we could talk about the hammer tonight for the rest of the evening, but what we're going to talk about is media technology, internet technology. I think that's what you came to listen to, but really this is only one section of the subject of technology. And sometimes I get a little disturbed at how broadly we use the word technology, because we already assume by hearing the word technology that we're going to talk about internet or media or computers or something that has glass and plastic and has some power to it, something that's flashy and gives us feedback, right? Well, that's what we are going to talk about tonight. But remember, when you use the word technology, that you use technology in your life much more than when you pull your cell phone out or use your computer. A wheelbarrow is a prime example of technology. When you go out to hoe the garden, you use that hoe, that's technology. When you upgrade from the hoe to the skid steer, that's more technology. When you go from the skid steer to the backhoe, now you advance again. That's all technology. And that really, in principle, is the world we're facing in media technology. It's a world that continues to grow, and its usefulness, its effectiveness, continues to spread out and become more powerful. So the title says Five Steps to Navigating Technology. And I think the five fundamentals that I want to talk about tonight probably isn't quite steps, but really fundamentals of technology. I think fundamentals in our life that technology will touch and things we need to think about is really probably a more accurate description of the five points that I want to look at tonight in more or lesser degree. Now, I've taken these five points, and each one of these we could spend the rest of the evening talking about, but we're just going to take these five points and look at a synopsis of each one because we're limited in time and you don't want to stay here for the rest of the night. So I'm going to just give you a little bit of a touch and go into these five fundamental points I believe are important as you and I navigate technology. The first one is the principle. The second one is the purpose. The third one, the power. And the fourth one, the peril. And the fifth one, the practice. So to start out with, the principles. I want to go to Revelation chapter 3, and I want to read some verses here about the church of Sardis. In Revelation 3, verse 1, it says, "And unto the angel of the church of Sardis write, These things saith he that hath the seven spirits of God and the seven stars, I know thy works, that thou hast a name, and that thou livest and art dead. Be watchful and strengthen the things which remain, that are ready to die, for I have not found thy works perfect before God. Remember therefore how thou hast received and heard, and hold fast and repent. If therefore thou shalt not watch, I will come on thee as a thief, and thou shalt not know what hour I will come upon thee. Thou hast a few names, even in Sardis, which have not defiled their garments, and they shall walk with me in white, for they are worthy. He that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment, and I will not blot out his name out of the book of life. But I will confess his name before my Father and before his angels. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit saith unto the churches." Now there's something in this passage that I want for us to think about tonight as we think about principles, and that is the admonition that the angel gave the church of Sardis here as this church was dying, and yet there was a remnant of people in this church that were still alive. He told them to remember what they had been given. Remember what they had been taught. Remember what the apostles had taught them when they started out in their Christian life. So in this dying situation, there were people who were dying and there were people who were spiritually alive. The angel said, you need to go back and remember the principles that you have been taught. Originally, when you started this walk, remember what your fathers have taught you and go back to that and rebuild what you have lost. Understand the principle. Remember what we have been taught. Remember the basics. There was a story that was told to me quite a few years ago by a man in our local town, and he was a professing Christian, and we were talking one day, and he told me a story about a businessman, and he told this story to me, I assume, to be true. I never heard this story any other place, but he told it to me as being true. But there was this wealthy businessman in the United States that had a burden for the people in Haiti. And so he decided that he would take some of his means from his business here in the U.S. and go invest it in the country of Haiti. So he traveled to Haiti, and he got over there to Haiti, and he went out and he bought this plot of ground. And after he bought this ground, he hired the local Haitians to help him, and he built this concrete wall around this plot of ground. He put a gate on the front by the street, and he bought some excavating equipment. And he brought this excavating equipment into this plot of ground inside of this wall. He worked up the ground, cleared it, cultivated it, and then he went out and got coconut tree seeds, and he took them in with the help of the Haitians, and he planted all of these seeds in this confined field inside of this wall. And I'm sure that as he planted this seed, he was telling these Haitians, these locals, what his vision was. And his vision was that he would plant these seeds, they would help him, they would understand these seeds would eventually grow into big trees, and for years and years it would feed the local community with coconuts. After he got done planting this field, he packed up his bags, got rid of his equipment, and flew back to the United States. And the story goes that after he left, these local Haitians went in through the gate, they dug up the seeds, and they ate them. So as we think about the church here at Sardis, and the angel telling him to go back to what you know. Go back to what you know is right. Remember the principles that you have been taught. I think for us, we need to take this admonition as we think about media technology, and that is to remember the fundamental of why this really matters to us. Remember the principle. You know, in our situation, we know that as a church of Jesus Christ, if we want to be a part of a living church, there must be life in the individual. There is no life in the organization. The life is in the individual. So there must be life in me. There must be life in you as we work together to maintain principles that have been taught and handed to us. It's very easy for us to get into a dying situation like the church here at Sardis. And he told them, remember, hold fast, and repent. And this, I believe, went for those who were still living and those who were dying. They needed to remember. And those who needed to repent to remember needed to repent. But the principle here is to remember what they had been given. Remember the principles that have been given to them by the apostles. Remember is a command if they wanted to stay alive. The commandments, the promises, the judgments, they needed to remember. And I don't think they really had forgot them as in their long-term memory. But they had forgot them in their life and practice. They had went on to other things. They had got distracted from what was really important. And they lost out on the principles that had been given to them. But it didn't change the fact that the age-old principles that had been taught to them by the apostles still existed. And it's the same for us today. We, as an Anabaptist people, have a lot that we have been given, a lot to remember. And remember is a command for you and I if we want to maintain life in the individual. If we want to maintain brotherhood that has life, we must remember the principles that have been given to us. As Anabaptist people in this country, we have much to remember. The more we have been taught, the more accountable we are. And what really are we missing as a people of God from full accountability of a knowledge of Jesus Christ? I believe the seed, the principle of media and internet technology that we are to uphold today has been planted for us already way back by our forefathers. And it's up to us in this much developed media culture what we will do with those principles by the decisions we make in life. The very fact that we are here tonight and we're concerned about media and internet technology verifies that principles were defined before our time by somebody before us. And they have been brought down to here, and now it's our concern of what's going to happen in the media environment that we live. So the question is, do we know what the principles are? Do you know why media is a concern to you as a Christian? Do you know why your grandfather or great-grandfather dealt with the issue of media in the 1950s and decided that television wasn't for him? Do you know why he did that? You know, television is not the principle. Television was an application made on a principle to uphold something greater. Do we understand the principles that matter in this whole question on media? Those principles we should be reinforcing by life's decisions. Now, the same as they did back in the 1950s when they dealt with this question of television or no television. And even though the media landscape has developed a lot and it's come to immerse our whole culture and our whole world, the principles are still the same. Too often, I think, our effectiveness is minimized because we have forgotten what the principles really are. What were the principles that were upheld before our time to bring us to this point where we're concerned about media and internet technology? So remembering is a key to the future of good applications in our life. As we make applications to the struggles and the problems that we face in our internet world, remembering is key. Because if we don't remember what those principles are, if we don't understand those and we don't define those principles, we're not equipped to make good decisions on applications and life and life's questions and life decisions. We say we remember what has been given and what we have received and heard. We have been given much. Much will be required. That farmer in Haiti, he created this fertile field. He put a wall of protection around it. And he gave instructions to these Haitians on how to grow this crop so it would be there for their children and their children's children and their great-grandchildren. He made a way for those people to eat for many generations. But instead of growing and maintaining that blessing, they consumed the seed. They sacrificed the future on the altar of the immediate. So my question is, on this point of remembering, what are we doing with our field that has been passed down to us? The seed of principle was planted before our time. An environment of truth has been preserved for us and our children. Now we must decide, will we consume it with a lack of vision? Will we continue to cultivate and fertilize and protect that seed? Number two, the purpose. I believe it's important that we understand why we are here. An illustration that I like to use is the Twin Towers in New York that were destroyed in 9/11. But I researched those towers and the way they were constructed, and it really was a very good construction plan. Those towers that you looked at on the horizon there in New York, you saw that glass around these square towers. You could not see what held up those towers. Inside of those towers, in the very center, there was this center pole that ran the complete length of the building, all the way from the foundation to the top. There was this center pod that ran up through the middle of those towers. And if I understand it right and read the blueprint correctly, there was these beams that would run out from this center pod at every floor to hold up the floor all the way up through those towers. But when you stand back and look at those towers, or when you did, they no longer exist, you didn't see that. You saw a lot of glass. You saw the structure, and you didn't really see what was actually holding up those towers. And if I understand it right, they built that intentionally for an airplane crash, in case close to them at JFK or wherever an airplane would crash into those towers. It could bust through the side of that tower, and it wouldn't affect the structure because the structure was in the center. But what they failed to compute was, as time went on and they built airplanes with more and more fuel capacity, they didn't anticipate the kind of explosion and heat that would go along with an airplane crash, and that was the demise of the towers. There's too much heat, it melted that center pod and it imploded on itself. But as we think about that concept of having a center support, our lives are made up much the same way as Christians. What you see in a person is a result of something. And if they are a Christian and they're following God, in the center of their life, there is a relationship with Jesus Christ. And that relationship holds up everything that has to do with their life. As they extend their relationships to other people, they have these relationships that come out from the center of their life to make up who they are and the personality that they are. And I want to read in Matthew chapter 22 and see what Jesus says about relationships. And he really gives us this twin tower concept, the two towers that everything in your life must fall underneath. And this is the account where the attorney comes to him, and he asked Jesus this question. He said, "Master, which is the greatest commandment in the law?" Jesus said unto him, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself." The second twin tower in your life. On these two commandments hang all the law and prophets. So your life must start as a Christian with that center support, with a relationship with Jesus Christ. And from there you build relationships with other people who have that relationship. And everything hangs on those relationships that you have with Jesus Christ first and with other Christians and how you relate to other people. That center support must be there if you want your life to shine for Christ, if you want people to be able to look at that and see from the outside in what supports your life, your habits, and your actions. Relationship. This Jesus here is saying he wants to see a complete and whole relationship with an individual. To love the Lord thy God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. That's completely everything that you have. You must have that relationship with Jesus Christ. And the second, love thy neighbor as thyself, which comes from this center support in your life of loving Jesus with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and with all of your mind. To have that ability to love others like Jesus loved, we must have this relationship with him. So our relationship with God is at the center. It's the bedrock of everything else that comes from our life. The decisions we make, the things that we do, must come forth from that center and show others about Jesus Christ. So as we think about that and how important our relationship is with Jesus Christ and our relationship is with other fellow Christians that make up brotherhoods, that make up families, that make up peer groups of Christians as we relate to each other. And Jesus is saying here that those are the two most important things. And if we're going to love the Lord with all of ourselves, then truth and obedience will be there with it. We cannot separate truth and obedience from loving the Lord with all our heart, with all our soul, and with all our mind. It goes together. As we exercise our faith, we spread our relationships to reach out to others, it will mirror the relationship we have with Jesus Christ. And as we think about relationships, you and I are created for relationships. Jesus told the lawyer this because he knew that we were created for relationships. He made us to want and to have an appetite for relationships. Now tonight, when you all ate food here, you went through the line, you were hungry, you looked at the food, you chose what you wanted to eat, you came back and it was really good. You enjoyed that food. When you got all done, you were full, right? And no matter how good that food tasted, you can't go through the line the second and third and fourth time and keep eating. Because when you are full, your appetite satisfied, you can't eat anymore. Did you know that you are created with the same kind of appetite for relationships? Jesus Christ, He designed and made you so that you have the same kind of appetite for relationships. And you get to choose every day how you're going to fill that little void in your life for relationships. But just remember that after you've made a choice and after you have spent time filling that relationship void, that you will at some point get full and you can't handle or you won't absorb any more relationships. That's the way we're created. Just like food. We get hungry, we eat, we get full. When we spend time with people or whatever we choose to fill that relationship void in our life, that appetite, that once we get full, that relationship void is satisfied until we build up an appetite again. So if you choose, instead of spending real time to build relationships with your brothers and sisters sitting right here, and you go off and you allow media technology like whatever it might be, your favorite laptop or your cell phone or your messaging platform or YouTube or whatever it might be, if you choose to leave this group and go over in the corner and spend a half hour on that kind of media, that will also fill that relational void that you have in your life. Don't expect to use up that time and come back and be able to relate to good Christian relationships like this after you have chosen to fill that appetite, because once you're full, you're full. If you allow your 10-year-old to play a video game all afternoon, and don't be surprised if he comes to the table and he doesn't want to hold a conversation with you, because you just allowed that video game to fill that relational void in his life that God designed for you as a father or mother to fill. And it's the same way with our appetite. If I fill up with junk food every day and I drink soda pop and I eat combos all the time, what do you think I will look like by the time I'm 60? It affects who I am and my health. It's the same way as we choose in relationships how to fill that relational void in my life. It will eventually shape my character, it shapes my reality, and it shapes my worldview of who and who I really am. Don't be surprised if you make those choices. If you come back and you come to church and you relate to Christian people and you want to have a Christian relationship with your brothers and sisters, it comes hard. And somehow this just doesn't feel good. Somehow it doesn't feel right. And my brothers and sisters just are hard to get along with. Why? Because we've made bad choices in filling that relational void in our life. Now there's good things that we can do with media technology. There's good ways to use it. And we'll get to that. But if we're allowing it to fill that relational void in our life, we're cheating ourselves out of what God designed for us as Christians and people in general, of how we need to be fulfilled in filling our time in that relational void with people that I can sit down with of like faith and fill that appetite, satisfy that appetite with somebody that can sit across the table from me and talk to me, somebody that I can align a vision with and they can help me to grow and to mature and become the person I want to be. So the kind of habits that we create will affect who I become as I fill that relational need in my life. So we can fill that time in media and internet technology, and it can steal our concentration, steal who we are, and make us into something we don't really want to be because of making bad choices as we fill that relational void. The media world is telling you to stay connected through us. We'll help you to stay connected. It gives you this false sense of relationship because you can connect with so many people. Stay connected through us. Media technology, I believe, has its place for connection. But if we're allowing that call for connection to replace good, solid relationships with our brothers and sisters and our family, then it's doing something to us that we don't want it to do. How can we confront this threat to build solid Christian relationships in real time while we're immersed with things like this? I believe we need to intentionally build and budget our time so we make sure that our prime time of our life, our days, our weeks, are filled with relating to people who we really care about. Budget our time. Make sure that we're making intentional choices so that this is contributing and not stealing from that relational need in my life. You know, Mark Zuckerberg, he's the chairman and CEO of Meta Platforms, who was formerly Facebook Incorporated. He made a trip around the world and visited churches in our country. And the reason he did was because he's not a godly person. I don't know if he goes to church or not, but he's certainly not a Christian. But he looked out there in the Christian culture of our nation, and he noticed something about these Christian churches and the relationships that were enshrined in that church setting. And he was attracted to that. So he traveled around to visit pastors and visit. He wanted to figure out how to take this and pull this community effect and learn more about it and implement it in his Facebook or his social media platform. His intention was to integrate community and somehow use this special camaraderie he was seeing in churches and pull it into his Facebook platform. He wanted to create a community with Facebook like you feel when you go to church with brothers and sisters that you love. But you know, Mark didn't understand, I don't think, that community in our brotherhood is not an end in itself. It's a result of something much deeper. It's the effect of something. It's the effect of that center column of relationship you have with Jesus Christ and the relationship you share with your brothers and sisters. And because of that, there is brotherhood. Without a relationship with Jesus Christ, there will be no brotherhood. There will be no deep camaraderie. Mark wanted to globalize this feeling and this brotherhood effect that comes from Christian people following God, obeying God, and because of that, they form good, deep relationships with brothers and sisters in the church. He wanted to pull that out. It's an impossibility. You know, brotherhood relationships is not integrated ideas. It's men and women who are sanctified by a truth, who come together with a vision that is similar, and they have a conviction for principles of godly relationships. And by that, brotherhood is formed, and is formed around biblical principles and godly values that we align on and we share and we have convictions for. It's not integrating all of our ideas and being committed to tolerance. That is not brotherhood. There was some men who created a forum, and the object of this, or the objective of this forum, was to study and come up with some attributes of real community. And there was four attributes that they defined in real community. And the first one was shared history. In real community, in community camaraderie, in where you live close together with your neighbors and you swap sugar for spaghetti noodles, and you have that relationship of trust and you work together, you leave your door unlocked when you go on a trip because your neighbor might need something. That is the kind of community they were talking about. And the first attribute that they said that this kind of community needs is shared history. And you know how it is. If you can move away from the community that you grew up in, and 20 years later you meet a school friend that you went to school with all your life, and there's a camaraderie that picks right up from right there, and you have something in common with him, there's something special about that history. The second one is permanence. And then permanence is dependability, commitment, where we build memories. There needs to be dependability and a permanence in real community. The third one is close proximity. And close proximity, obviously, is living close together. A local community where life is lived together. And the fourth one is shared vision, like-minded with similar values. And as you look in here and you study the New Testament, you'll find all four of these attributes in the teachings in God's Word and how church brotherhoods should relate. But if you look at online relationships and you study relationships that are created and maintained online, almost none of these are found in online relationships. Maybe shared vision. You know, there's a lot of people that find each other online through media and groups that because they share something, they share in common some kind of vision for something. And so that brings them together. But you will find all of these in New Testament brotherhood. Real community, relationships that take work. If we aren't careful, we can turn around and we can spend our time instead of building these real relationships in a real brotherhood, we can take our attention away and we can spend it all on staying connected instead of building relationships. The connected world is very demanding. It requires a lot. It creates a false reality of what a good relationship really is. You know, if you want to chase the world of staying connected and you want to let it drive you, your relationships become more and more spread out till it's a mile wide and an inch deep. And really, God designed our relationships to be narrow and deep, not wide and shallow. And we don't have time to get into that, but we're only designed to have so many relationships, and we cannot exceed that because that's the way we were created. You know, as we look at media and internet technology, for us today as Christian people, relaying information by media, staying connected with our fellow believers in the logistics of our everyday life, and as we work together, it can be good. It can be good. But if we let this whole concept become inverted to where we spend most of our time staying connected with people we really don't know, and we sacrifice our time and attention and don't spend time with the people we really know and really care about, and we know that they love us, then we're going to lose out in relationships, and our concept of relationships will change. Relationships has been something we have always cherished in our Anabaptist churches. But what should concern us is that we look around at the broad spectrum of Anabaptist churches in our country, while we're becoming more and more connected, our relationships are not improving. Number three, the power. I want to talk about influence and appreciate the power of influence. Influence means the power to change or affect someone or something. The power to cause changes without directly forcing them to happen. The power of influence is something we often underrate. We know that we are influenced. We understand that. In a general sense, we admit that. But I don't think we understand really how easily we are influenced and how quickly things that influence us can change who we are. Back in the year 2000, in London, over the Thames River, they built a bridge. It was a pedestrian bridge. It was 2,000 feet long and 12 feet wide, I believe. It cost over £20 million to build this bridge. And the bridge architect, Norman Foster, with the help of about 200-person engineer team, built the bridge, and he built it in a special way without a lot of overhead wires and guardrails. He built this bridge, and it had its supporting members that kind of flared out from the bottom of the bridge and made like a little bit of a wing or a fan that came out from underneath that bridge. And it was coined the Blade of Light because as you looked at it across the river, it had this thin aspect of light across the Thames River. So this was an engineering masterpiece. And as the day got closer, they were going to have the ribbon cutting and turn people loose to go across this bridge. It finally came on June 10th, the year 2000. And they had a long line of people that wanted to be the first to cross this bridge. They had camera crews there and the media was there. They set up to take pictures and videos of these people that crossed the bridge, the first ones to cross this bridge. As they cut the ribbon and they turned people loose to go across this bridge, and the people started to get on this bridge and flow onto this bridge, they were taking steps on this bridge, and as more and more people got on and these footfalls fell on this bridge, there started to be a vibration in the bridge. And the more people that came on, the more vibrations came with this bridge. And as these vibrations got stronger, the vibration turned into a slight wobble. What do you think happened to these people who were crossing the bridge when this vibration turned into a wobble? Well, they fell in sync with this wobble as they walked. They kind of involuntarily or just stepped with this wobble until this wobble got significant enough that people were kind of doing this skating dance across the bridge because they didn't want to fall. It was sort of an instinctive preservation. You know, we don't want to fall in front of all these people. What do you think that did to the wobble in the bridge? It just made it worse. Well, they managed to get the people off and the wobble stopped without anything breaking. And after 5 million more pounds, they fixed the problem and they let people go across the bridge and they went across without a vibration. Influence. If we claim that we cannot be influenced, we defy creation. God made us to be influenced. Our brains are wired to be influenced by somebody, something. God made you to where your brain is pliable and open to other people and other people's brains to reach inside there and shape who you are. That's the way you're created. We are all created with, in our brain, there's mimicry neurons in there that mimic what we're around and who we're around. You know that the people who come from New York talk different than from the people who come from Florida. I got some friends from Florida, and I'm pretty sure at their school they don't teach the Southern accent in their school, pretty sure. And I'm pretty sure the people up in New York don't teach their children to talk like Yankees. I don't think so. Well, how does that happen? It's because of those mimicry neurons in their brain, and they talk like the people they're around and grew up around. That is a very simple illustration of how this mimicry system works in our brain. Involuntary reaction to copy what we see. Accents and speech is a very simple illustration, but there's a lot of more complex things that take place in my life that define who I am, and the reality of what I think about life is mostly made up from my past experiences and as I relate to other people. That has shaped who I am today. Neurologists say that there is no such thing as an individual brain because every brain has been affected by many other brains. And so because of that, you have allowed somewhere to somebody or something to reach in and make you the person that you are. That's just science, and that's how you're created. When you interact with another person, you're becoming like that person. Your brain is taking shape like that person's brain. Of course, the more interaction, the more time spent, the more that takes place. You become like that person deep inside your brain. It's shaping like the person you choose to be around. We become like those that we are around from the inside out. And that's why it's so important that we pick and choose relationships with caution. In 1 Corinthians 15, verse 33, it says, "Be not deceived. Evil communications corrupt good manners." And this principle, you can start in the Old Testament and see how God drilled into the children of Israel to be separate from the nations around them. Why? Because he understood how they were created. Whenever they allowed those heathen people to come into their midst, who won and who became like who? It happened every time. As they allowed these heathen nations to get close proximity, they interacted with them, they became like them. And that principle comes through all the way to us here in 2023 as we relate to influences around us. If we have to choose carefully the people we are around because they will reach in and affect your brain and who you are. Close proximity brings influence, whether it's by association or by ideas and attitudes. All through God's word, he is calling us to come out and be separate from influences and trends and ideas that are not godly. And that is to separate us, put a separation between what we know is not right and what we want to be. Media technology very much is an influence that influences who I am. And it's an environment all of its own. You know, it's a virtual world, and so it's not as easy as deciding whether my son should go to the neighbor's house or not and how much time he should spend with the neighbors. It's a virtual world that is right here, ready at any time to enter our life and to influence who you are. Because time spent in that environment is opportunity for influence. Because content viewed and heard will influence what I think. We spend time allowing someone to entertain us or teach us or fill our time in any way. We're allowing them to reach into our mind and change who we are. Whether it's somebody I know sitting here on the front bench or whether it's somebody that comes through this cell phone that I don't know. But if I follow them and I read about them and I watch them, I'm allowing them to shape my reality and what I think about life. It's critical in our generation to define and guard good influence. And it's become very complex because the world of influence is right here in my pocket or right here on the desk or on the kitchen table. There's millions of ideas and things that can come through that medium that will change who you are if you allow it to fill your relational needs. And it comes back to the user at the end of the day, the person that sits down at the table and opens that laptop and chooses the content through that medium. It's up to that user whether it will serve your relationships or sever the relationships that are so valuable to you. Influence is and should be a powerful tool that we are busy using to help each other. We need to use influence for our good. Influence is a good thing if we're willing to use it in the right way. We need to be here to help each other, to influence each other, to help each other become what we all want to be. But it's going to come with some hard choices, and we're going to have to choose in this virtual environment how to regulate that and keep this where it belongs so that I have time to build what means so much to me. You know, the people on this bridge responded to a vibration. They just walked on the bridge innocently, and then as soon as this vibration started to take place, they responded to that vibration, and then they responded to the wobble. None of them thought through what was happening. They just responded and created this spontaneous order, all of them doing the same thing because of what was happening in the bridge. If you would have taken this same set of people off the bridge, taken them out in the lawn, and lined them up 12 feet wide and 1,000 feet long, and you would have tried to teach them this skating dance in 5 minutes and said, now when I say left, go left. When I say right, go right. How much success do you think you would have in teaching these people how to stay in order? It would have been chaos. But all you had to do is put them on the bridge and start this vibration, and they contribute to it, and they all fell into this spontaneous order without even thinking what they were doing. I believe we as a church body in close proximity, churches that relate together, friends that relate together, in close relationships, in this setting right here in Anabaptist circles, we have ties and we influence each other across church lines, within brotherhoods, across family lines. And this spontaneous order can easily take place in media technology in our lives. These trends that start way out here with people like Mark Zuckerberg, they build and sell these things, and they come closer and closer, and pretty soon it's picked up over here, it's picked up over here. The relationships coexist here, maybe across church lines, maybe in a church, and my friend has it, I get it. Pretty soon the vibration starts, then it turns into a wobble. Pretty soon we're all doing this skating dance, and nobody knows for sure how we got here. When a few people fall in step with a trend, with some kind of something that seems like it serves a purpose, they get it, somebody else gets it, the vibration starts. And some of this maybe is okay. But what the dangerous part that I see in this is when we start this wobble socially and we don't know the changes we're making. We just fall into this spontaneous order and we're not sure how we got here. Suddenly we look back 5 years and we realize that we're different than we were 5 years ago, and it wasn't planned. We just got here by default because we followed the wobble. We're just one more person crossing the bridge, doing the wobble because we're keeping up with our friends. We're doing what everybody else is doing. Media has this potential. It's very social. It keeps us all connected. And it puts people under pressure to adopt the latest communications because we want to stay connected. We join that wobble without thinking, where is this going to take me? Is this really going to serve my purpose? Is this a change I really want to make? Instead, I get on the bridge, I start to walk, and I join the wobble. Kind of a social survival instinct, maybe. You know, there's a lot of good that can come from positive influence, but everything positive can be negative. Media technology is no exception. As media takes root in our culture, it causes vibrations and changes the habits of people. Media has made an ecological change in our culture. And there again, we don't have time to go into it, but when an ecological change takes place, we think we can have Mennonites and we can add media, and we just have media with Mennonites, but that's not true. We have taken Mennonites, we add media, and we have a different kind of Mennonite. It's an ecological change. Now, some of that cannot be avoided. But my question is, are we planning for the future? Have we made these choices intentionally and on purpose? Unfortunately, a lot of the changes has not been that way. It's been a response to a vibration that has become a wobble. The peril, number four. I believe that one of the dangers in media technology is that the world of entertainment can steal the purpose of media and internet becoming a tool instead of entertainment. Entertainment, a lot of things about media and internet technology is wrapped in entertainment because that's what draws you to it. It's fast, cheap, and easy, and it's entertaining. So even the things that are instructional, the good things that come with it, are wrapped up in some kind of an entertainment aspect. And I believe that as we address technology and we think about how this is going to serve my life, we must keep the principle that media must serve as a tool in my life and not become an entertainment piece. Because if we allow this entertainment aspect to saturate my life, the tool will go away and we will lose relationships that we care so much about. There's much about media technology that is at war with the principles of using this technology as a tool. It's a peril that we face every day. Lots of media technology is pitched with entertainment. Even good instructional YouTube videos will have really neat music, and the guy will posture himself to be entertaining, to move quickly. He doesn't want you to get bored. He doesn't want you to get tired of him. He wants to keep you coming back. Subscribe, 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 right? And he wants you to do that because that's his survival in this vicious world that he lives in as a YouTuber. So he wants you to keep coming back. So he must wrap this instruction that you want to learn about. Maybe he's teaching you something about your refrigerator or your lawnmower. But he's going to wrap it as much as he can in an entertainment piece so that you come back the next time you need help with your lawnmower. The peril is that we don't lose sight of this as a tool and become saturated with the entertainment. You know, that was one of the principles upheld in the 50s by our forefathers when they took a stand on television in the church as families and as churches. They refused on the principle that they did not want the world to entertain their children. They did not want the world to decide what would entertain their children. And so they said no to television. Now, none of you have a television. You probably won't buy a television. You don't need a television because that principle can be violated right here with this cell phone. And how many of us, when we make decisions, we wouldn't buy a TV, but the principle that was upheld in the 50s by not having television is getting swept downstream because guess what? The world is entertaining our children. When we pick up a media device, at that point, we become responsible to make sure that this serves my life and, as a Christian, my relationships that I care so much about. The same piece of glass and plastic will either serve our purpose or destroy what means so much to my spiritual vitality. The decision is ours. As we think about this invention of media and internet technology, we can get so focused on the negative that we can actually get sidetracked and we can't use it as a tool. But then if we focus, I believe an over-hyper focus of what is all bad is not really a healthy focus. We need to look at what is the principle that I'm living by and divide the subject by that principle. Many inventions were the same way. We think about the printing press. We laud the invention of the printing press as being something, an invention that has incredibly helped getting the Word of God out to other countries and to people, the printing press. But did you know that when the printing press was invented, soon after that invention, very quickly, there was an underground pornography business started at the same time. So while the printing press served a very good purpose, it also served an evil purpose at the same time. Now, number five, the practice. When I gave this illustration at the beginning of the talk here, only about 2/3 of you knew what a hammer was. Or at least that's all I heard. The practice. I believe it is important, finally, at the end of this conversation, I'm sure among our Anabaptist circles, we have spent hours and days and weeks and years talking about media and the problems and the things we don't like and how this affects us while we are still immersed in the world of media. and internet technology. We've spent so much time talking about this, but finally, we will be defined in history by what we do about it. And I believe that as we think about this whole subject, we must apply the knowledge that we have to the principle. We must take what we have, what we know, and put it to practice today. And it's easy for us to all stand around in little huddles and talk about what we don't like, and talk about how we don't like this and don't like that, and this doesn't work and that doesn't work. But finally, tomorrow, what will you do about it? Apply knowledge. You know, it's just like this illustration. All of you knew what a hammer was, right? You knew it. You had the knowledge, but you didn't call it out. Maybe some of you did. Some of you did, some of you didn't. And it's okay. But that the same peer pressure that kept you from saying, hammer, is the same pressure that you face today in the media and internet world to apply what you know is right. Because you have other people around you that aren't doing it, and so, well, I know that's probably right. I probably shouldn't be so immersed in this YouTube subscriber. I shouldn't be so taken up with all these group messages that are stealing time from my husband or my wife or my children. I shouldn't be so consumed with news. I know that. But you keep right on doing the wrong thing. It's because of this peer pressure we don't step out and apply knowledge. You know, we can't wait around for the perfect answer. If we stand around here and we wait to do anything until the perfect answer, tomorrow the situation will change and again we won't have the perfect answer. We must act on what we know to be right, even though it's not perfect. The principles of the Bible are perfect. The applications we make to them will not be perfect. The applications we make are intentional efforts to uphold principles the best we can as Christian people. We do our best to study the principle. We do our best to rightly divide the situation I face today, and we act on that knowledge. You know, the effectiveness of our application is not in its perfection. It's in the blessing of God in a united effort, individually, as families and as churches, to uphold His perfect principles. That's how we will be effective. By the blessing of God in our life, to do our best to apply the knowledge that we have and to uphold the principles that mean so much to us. God bless you.
This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at the Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2023, held at Pleasant View School in Arcola, Illinois, on March 3 and 4.